Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 32. Mam hi partha vyapashritya yepi supapayonaya striyo vaishastita sudras te piyanti param gatim mam of me. He, certainly, partha, o son of Pritha, yapashritya, particularly taking shelter, yea, those who, api, also, siu, are, papayonaya, born of a lower family. Sriyaha, women. Vaisha, mercantile people. Tata, also. Shudra, lower class men. Te api, even they. Yanti, go. Param, to the supreme. Gatim, destination. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, and shudras, workers, can attain your supreme can obtain the supreme destination. Purport. It is clearly declared here by the Supreme Lord that in devotional service there is no distinction between the lower and higher classes of people. In the material conception of life, there are such divisions. But for a person engaged in transcendental devotional service to the Lord, there are not. Everyone is eligible for the supreme destination. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, it is said that even the lowest, who are called chandalas, dog eaters, can be purified by association with a pure devotee. Therefore, devotional service and the guidance of a pure devotee are so strong that there is no discrimination between the lower and the higher classes of men. Anyone can take to it. The most simple man taking shelter of the pure devotee can be purified by proper guidance. According to the different modes of material nature, men are classified in the mode of goodness, brahmanas, the mode of passion, kshatriyas or administrators, the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, vaishyas or merchants, and the mode of ignorance, shudras or workers. Those lower than them are called chandalas, and they are born in sinful families. Generally, the association of those born in sinful families is not accepted by the higher classes. But the process of devotional service is so strong that the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all the lower classes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna. As indicated here by the word yapashritya, one has to take shelter completely of Krishna. Then one can become much greater than the great jnanis and yogis. Mam hi partha vyapashritya yepi supapayonaya striyo vaishastita sudras te piyanti param gatim. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, and shudras, workers, can obtain the supreme destination. This is a process of elevation through the modes of nature called Vanashram Dharma. That system is practical system, beginning with brahmachari life, where there's no question of economic development, nor is there any real need in the Vedic society for children to economically develop for the most part, because there is nothing to buy. In other words, if you don't have so many objects to buy, You don't have to work to get money to buy them. Now people think it must be a horrible experience living in a world without a computer. You know, only thing to do is to talk to people rather than write them letters. And you wouldn't be able to find out all the problems going on all over the world. You'd only know the problems locally. And how can you live without knowing everyone's problems? And there would be available all kinds of nonsense literature, all things which are ultimately leading to sinful activities, like illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, etc. You couldn't buy drugs online, you couldn't, you know, whatever. So people think that this is primitive. People talking to each other, walking. Actually, could you imagine people having to walk? Grow food, actually put their hand on the dirt and grow food. How abominable. You know, what to speak of having to breathe fresh air and drink pure water, eat organic food, even be friendly to strangers. Could you imagine that? How low class. And not even kill animals. Grow enough food that even the animals are provided and everyone has enough. That way you couldn't accumulate wealth and feel superior to everyone. So what else would you do? It would be embarrassing not to feel superior to everyone and proving it by how much money you had in the bank. And then you wouldn't be able to control countries and accumulate all kinds of sinful activities for yourself. So that you're guaranteed that Yamaraj is going to have to invent a new body for you. Because right now there's no body that accumulates it, that is correspondence for so many sinful activities. In any case, in the Vedic culture, children would actually study real knowledge that were not this body. They didn't learn technology the way that's presently be taught. They didn't learn all kinds of things that they grow up and just forget. Like nowadays, all the students are taught, at least when I went to school, trigonometry, algebra, calculus, whatever. Do they teach that here too? Now how many people have, after school, how many of us have used calculus, trigonometry, and algebra since then? Did you use it, Ananda? Do we even know it anymore? Can you actually use it? Could you figure out what a trigonometry table actually is? So most of the things that people learn nowadays have no value to them. They just waste their lives learning useless things. But the children used to learn on the job training that you're not your body. And therefore they grew up with that anxiety because they knew that they were not their body. So they didn't think about, oh, I'm getting older, I'm going to die. Because they knew that they weren't going to die. They were going to go to another body. And their next body would be according to their activities in this lifetime. So even if you became a king, you had control over a vast whole Bard Barsha, or maybe even Jambudweep, or maybe even the Bhumandala. Still, they acted piously because they were trained from their childhood. Everything you do, everything you think, everything you say, you're going to get a reaction for it. So more empowerment, more power meant more responsibility. Because you can get yourself into even more trouble than an ordinary person. And then they'd apply it by sacrifice. If they didn't become completely renounced as a brahmachari through the service of the guru and the austerities and the sense of mind control they learn, then they'd become a grihastha and continue on with yagya, dana, and tapas. No, yagya, dana, and dhamma. They give in charity. They control the senses, which means that they follow the regular principles. They had children only for procreation, for the most part. They didn't eat meat or gamble or take intoxication. The actual grihasthas. And even if they were shudras, everything was regulated. And after a grihastha life, those who were more advanced, they'd go through to the vanaprastha life. They go into the forest. Of course, in the forest, people weren't, as they are now, hunting with guns. So they went to the forest to retire and got shot. Someone thought you were a bear or something. They live simply in the forest and meditate on Krishna. And then when they were ready, they went on pilgrimage with their wife, or they went to the forest. Or when they were ready, then they took sannyas and went door to door and they talked to people about Krishna consciousness. And people are, for the most part, happy to see them, at least in the true Vedic culture. And they had something to do for the rest of their life, hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's all they did. They didn't have to worry about family life and politics and things like that. They were simply absorbing their minds in telling other people about Krishna. So that was one way of doing it, a gradual process. And in this age, everyone was born Shudra, and we were degraded by modern education to become less than a Shudra. Shudras, at least, they're submissive to the higher classes, but there are no higher classes to be submissive to. So no one was learned submissiveness, especially to Krishna. So the only opportunity is the chanting of Hare Krishna and the process of devotional service. Now, as Prabhupada writes here, it is not that anyone who's officially engaged in devotional service automatically becomes eligible to go to the spiritual world. It's not just an official business. Prabhupada said, the process of devotional service is so strong, the pure devotee of the Supreme Lord can enable people of all lower classes to attain the highest perfection of life. This is possible only when one takes shelter of Krishna. As indicated here by the word yapashitya, one has to take shelter completely of Krishna. Then one can become greater than the great gyanis and yogis. Complete shelter of Krishna. So if it's half-hearted, it's called Vaidhi Mishra Bhakti. I'm thinking I'm a devotee, but I'm attached to the results of my work. I'm thinking I'm a devotee, but I don't really believe in Krishna, that he's God. He may be God, he may not be God, but as far as I'm concerned, you have to be practical. And whatever I have is mine, whatever Krishna has, he can keep. But we're not. A jnani is searching, or jignasu, searching for Krishna. Or a jnani thinks that I'm not this body, but he doesn't really think about Krishna very much. So complete shelter of Krishna is not so easy. Although the process is easy, chanting Hare Krishna, and the nine processes of devotional service, and the very powerful processes like deity worship. But one has to practice. And as we can see, those who are even practicing, often they get entangled in the material energy and their practice is slackened. But they still think that they're devotees, and sometimes they even believe that they're advanced devotees, because they don't really understand the process of devotional service or what it means to take complete shelter of Krishna. That we can only find out when we actually take more and more shelter of Krishna. And then we can see it's the gaps between my remembering Krishna and the gaps between my... is not necessarily so close. Not necessarily... I wake up in the morning and all I see is the pastimes of Krishna everywhere. When I go to sleep, I dream about Krishna's pastimes. So there are gaps, and therefore, even though we're living in the temple, even though we're practicing devotional service, even though we may be to different degrees engaged in devotional service, that doesn't necessarily mean we're in Krishna consciousness. And devotional service without Krishna consciousness is half complete. Because the purpose of devotional service is to help us become Krishna conscious. And if we're not Krishna consciousness, or Krishna conscious, or I should say, as much as we become Krishna conscious, to that degree we can understand we're properly performing devotional service. Therefore, if we're not fully conscious of Krishna, which I imagine most of us would probably say we're not, therefore we haven't completely taken shelter of Krishna. And although the process, anye tvayavana jananta shuti anye vyakupasate, although the process is easier by hearing about Krishna and then applying it, still it takes some time, even for one who's sincerely trying. To go from simply religious activities, trying to be austere, trying to be merciful, trying to be clean, trying to be truthful, to the process of acting piously, of actually becoming really truthful, really austere, really clean, really merciful, to the process of tolerating the dualities of the material world, in spite of all the conveniences and happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, etc., remaining neutral. So to the process where we actually are factually engaged in service with some degree of devotion, to actually remembering everything is Krishna's and doing things under Krishna's guidance and his representative in order to please Krishna. That's called devotional service. To the platform of actually coming to understand Krishna in truth, to have direct experience of Krishna to different degrees, and what to speak of meditating in trance upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the process. It may take some time, but it means we have to apply ourselves, as it says, vyapashritya. We have to apply ourselves. It's not that, it's simply a question of time. How long does it take? It's not like baking a cake. You wait for half an hour and the cake is baked. Well, as Prabhupada writes, one could become Krishna conscious in one moment, but not after millions of years. Is only a question of understanding and accepting the fact. There are so many things we have to understand. There's so many things we have to accept, all in relationship to our being Krishna's eternal servant. So it takes some time. But luckily we're eternal, so we have some time. Otherwise it would be very difficult. The problem is that we think we're temporary, therefore we're very impatient. That's our main problem. And we're also caught up in all the dealings of the material energy. And Kali Yuga is not a pleasant time to get caught up in what's going on in the material world. Because it's not very pleasant for the most part. Still, that's good, because if it was pleasant, if the newspapers just talked about the pastimes of the apsaras with the demigods in Swarga Loka, we probably read the newspapers more than we should. Luckily, we can't expect to get very pleasant news, which probably will, most devotees will be discouraged from getting too deeply into all the karmic reactions that are going on in present society. So in that sense, Kali Yuga is good for a devotee, because there's not much to look forward to, unless you're waiting for Kalki to come. But that's not for a while. I'm waiting for the next incarnation. I got to be here for it. I'll give him a flower garland. From Gorni Thai, of course. Came a little late, but here's your garland. So, in the meantime, we should understand the value of this process and try to focus our mind upon Krishna, because Kali Yuga life is very short, and there's a lot of distractions. And therefore, the more we try to actually do our work in such a way as to remember Krishna and do what Krishna wants us to do, then the result is that we'll actually see tangible progress in our life. We'll actually see we're actually taking shelter of Krishna and following the process in such a way as that we actually see we're going from giving up our sinful desires and activities to acting piously and positively in devotional service, to becoming tolerant of the dualities of material existence, to accepting devotional service and rising to the pure knowledge of the personality of Godhead, and then meditating in trance upon Him, and in becoming eternally blissful in Krishna consciousness. So everyone can do it, but not everyone is inclined to do it. And therefore, those who have, as Krishna will say in the next verse, that those who are Brahmins, those who are Kshatriyas, those who are Kim Puna, Brahmana Punyas, those who are devotees, who are trying to be devotees, how much greater are they who in this miserable world engage in my devotional service? So it's not that everyone has the same occupational duty, who's even trying to become a devotee, but everyone has the same opportunity just to think about Krishna. That's all the gopis did. They didn't have a high position. There's not one gopi who made it to become a sannyasi. There wasn't one gopi in Krishna's pastime. He even became a GBC or a temple president. They didn't even become a temple commander. All they did was churn butter. They weren't even vegans. Yet, they thought about Krishna with deep love and devotion, constantly, ever growing. That was their perfection. So no one's preventing us from thinking about Krishna in any circumstance. You can't come to the temple and they have a thermometer, you know, and it goes into the red when you think too much about Krishna. They stop, you're thinking too much about Krishna. So no one's preventing us from thinking about Krishna. So we have to understand the value of thinking about Krishna and the process by which we can learn how to think about Krishna, get Krishna's mercy so we can remember Him, and then we'll make progress. That's all. We're not trying to become great, famous, control the universe, can't even control the Brahmacharya ashram. We're just trying to control our mind and senses so we can think about Krishna, that's all. And if we do that, then our life will become perfect. And if we don't, then we have to come back to the Brahmacharya ashram again. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
I have.
Yes.
Basically, I have two questions. So taking shelter doesn't mean that just when we are having some difficulties, we take shelter of Krishna. Taking shelter of Krishna means that we are basically all the time thinking of Krishna.
Actually, we're always in difficulty. Just when things get so bad, then we think, oh, I'm in difficulty. Other than that, just think about for one moment how much pain your body is in right now.
Yeah.
And we think, oh, it's all right. It's not that painful. At every moment we're in difficulty. We don't know if the ceiling is going to drop down. We can't be sure of anything. And if you don't feel yourself to be in difficulty, just read the newspapers. There'll be enough there to put you into difficulty. Mental, at least. So we're always in difficulty, it's just so we don't realize it. That's the problem. An intelligent person thinks that at any moment I might die. And a fool thinks I'm going to be here forever. Why should I bother? But we may not be complete fools and we may not be intelligent, but we should try to increase our remembrance of Krishna, and that rely upon Him more for what we're doing, to make our activities Krishna conscious. And we'll be able to see what's the difference between when I'm doing something for Krishna, factually for Krishna, consciously for Krishna, and when I'm just living my life in an unconscious state. Just being like that. So, therefore, regulate our lives and try to prove our devotional activities so that we feel our, you know, we start actually thinking I'm doing this for Krishna. Rather than I'm here, I'm talking to this devotee because I have a half an hour to just shoot the wind, shoot the breeze with, or whatever we're thinking. But actually, I'm talking to this devotee because this is what Krishna wants me to do. This is my service to him. I'm doing everything because this is my service. And of course, we're not going to jump to everything all at once, but something at least during the day. And then see what the difference is. That's why when it's possible to distribute books, it's so good. Because you, after a while, you figure out, without Krishna's mercy, I'm not going to do anything out here. I'm just going to have a hard time. The only thing I'm going to do is look at my watch for when I'm going to get out of here. Without relying on Krishna, you know, in that situation, one can see I'm powerless. And in the temple, we think, well, Prashadam's there. My bed's still there. What do I got to worry about? Everything's all right. It's not so bad. Another question.
I mean, the second one, many people, ladies of course, they say that Prabhupada doesn't say anything in his purport, and even you did say nothing, because it's why the women are low birth. And then when I was talking to my sister, I couldn't tell her that this is material, from material point of view, not spiritual.
Yeah, if they don't understand, that's why they're a low birth. That's why everyone is low birth nowadays. Most people can't understand it. Neither women can understand it, nor can the men understand it. They're all low birth.
So even we, of course. It's,
But, you know, between the men and the women, the men are usually, the ladies, generally speaking, they're known as stri. So they're more enthusiastic generally than the men are, but not always, about expanding material life. So therefore, when the women take over society, material society, who are not devotees, then it causes all kinds of havoc. Then everyone becomes equal. Especially, you know, they produce, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, then they produce Varna Sankar when women are in chaste and loose society. Then we have a problem. And when they don't understand that, they think, well, why should anyone control me? Because they don't understand the modes of nature controlling them. This Prabhupada once asked one lady, so you want to be liberated? And they said, yeah. So your choice is either you kill the child or you beg from the government. Is that a very good choice? And the lady reporter said, yes, that's my choice. So they don't realize they're being exploited. Not where they're by either the modes of nature, or by in the form of men who are trying to exploit them. They get pregnant, the man goes away and says, we're all equal, we're all free. You take care of the kid and I'm free to go. So they realize they're being exploited. But if a woman's properly trained, you know, and devotional, then they have the advantage of being more devotional. So again, you know, men who are uncontrolled, they're also in the bodily concept of life. And women who are uncontrolled in the bodily concept of life. And if women are actually in Krishna consciousness, and men in Krishna consciousness, then they'll do their duties because they're all equally important. It's not that I have a child. It's not really important to make him Krishna conscious. No, that's the most important thing you can do. Start from the birth, helping him become Krishna conscious. There's no better service. Anything else? Thank you very much. Khala Gwendraj Bhagavad Gita Kijai.